Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, Fed Come Along, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a podcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, call it 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for quality 17702. Also, want to, you can also watch me and join me on Twitch. I've got a channel there, SFU On Call, and you should be able to easily find it. I also post a event link to many possible things from Twitter to Facebook to the SFB discussion board, and of course, to my Discord server. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. If you want to via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My podcast account is sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. Also, you want to follow my personal account. That's Paul Franz. And let's go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. Just a reminder that this has things about being Catholic and, of course, tech. And every once in a while, I discuss SFB, but that's a rare thing indeed on my personal account. But I also have, my business account, Franz Games. So if you want to follow me there, you can follow me there. You've got plenty of options. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast, Get Standard Podcast, available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steve Cole is busy working on A Call to Arms, Starfleet book number 2, or actually 2.0. Sorry, I apologize. Cab's Log number 54. Also, of course, reducing things on the BBS and running through the proposals board. Also doing things on Shapeways and SF, the Starfleet Index. And Gene, also working on Gene's GURPS Prime Directive Revision. There's some news about that a little bit later on. Steve Petrick, of course, was busy on SFB updates and also the Tholian Master Starship book. Gene worked on, of course, that GURPS Prime Directive Revision some more and then sent it to Steve Jackson Games for the final check on it to make sure it followed his guidelines and so forth for a GURPS book. And, of course, she uploaded ships to Shapeways, commanded the Rangers, and also make sure the spam assault on BBS was kept to nil, if at all possible. Moving on to the SFB Online Tournament, we have, the Sapphire Star Tournament, number 1. Semifinals. Currently, Peter Bakia defeated Ted Fay in the Klingon, so the first Klingon falls to a Gorn. And Paul Lee Graves, ISC versus Bill Shella, and the Klingon had not yet played. They at least not yet completed their game. They should have completed it by now. I'm not sure what's going on with that. They need to be kicked. Moving onward to the library report. This week, Frank LeMay has been definitely busy at work the past couple weeks. I'm happy to say that now we have 2,519 completed conversions. Most of these have been ISC for this past week. Actually, I think they've all been ISC this past week. And yet to be converted is down to only 811. That brings us up to a percentage complete of 75.65%. We're getting there, you know. And again, I will be reviewing those yet to be converted to see where they fall and give an analysis of that. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, as the one, the only, Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we actually have Barry, we have the Drex, and hopefully we have you here. Well, if you're not, well, that's kind of pointless because if you're listening to this, you are here. And if you're not here, as in the TalkShoe chat room or the Twitch chat room, obviously I would know that. But anyhow, getting back to life in the fast lane, we have Dave is with us tonight, and we have Barry, which is awesome to hear that Barry is back. How you doing, Barry?
Hey there. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Help yourself, man.
It's been busy.
I figured as much.
Yeah. Been doing a lot of traveling lately, but you know that's my life.
Oh yeah, I know, and I know you're supposed to hit. You're still heading to see your daughter this weekend?
No. I'm going to Gamers this weekend. I'm actually in New York right now.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I'm at my house.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. Now, I don't have a car, so that's going to be kind of interesting.
Definitely makes things interesting to get to someplace which is outside of York when you don't have a car and you're in York.
Right. Now, I have a hotel room, but...
Hotel room where?
Oh, about 5 miles away from... do you know where Bass Pro Shop is?
Yes.
83?
Mm-hmm.
It is literally 100 yards from there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I one thing I did not check to see exactly where Gamers of Summer is this year.
Oh, same place as last year.
Okay.
The same fire hall.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, which is near where Doug lives, correct? That one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I'm just looking at the Drex. Now, I haven't looked at the Drex in, like, forever.
Understood.
So I'm looking at the one PDF that was created by...
Burnside.
I guess Ken Burnside.
Yep.
Right. And that one has... It's got a lot of heavy weapons.
That's very interesting. Actually... Barry, before we move on to the Drex, I want to do one quick thing before we start the Drex, because of just a quick update for people when it comes to Merchants of the Federation. A couple things I want to mention about it. Number one, I've got the pieces available to me. There's still a little more cutting I need to do for the smaller chits, but I will definitely have that for this weekend. I'll print out the board game and some pieces with our card, from heavy stock, 110-pound card stock. Not exactly cheap, but it works. It works nicely for the cards. I didn't put any backings on the cards, which, no big surprise there. But anyhow, a couple things that I ran into right off the top of the head. Number one, it doesn't say anywhere in the rules how much money you start off with. My assumption is you start off with zero since nothing is mentioned. Because it does explicitly say that, you start with a free trader. And free trader has two action points. I forget how much cargo it has. And you start with there, and then one of the things you do before you even get to the actions is you have to adjust the market. And one thing I posted on the discussion board, which was that I noticed that since there's no special rule that says you skip the market adjustment, basically, for a two-person game, you start with 6 cards of adjustment. At least that's the way I see it. I might have read something incorrectly, which hopefully Jay will correct me on that. So I'm waiting on his response on that. At the moment, I'm assuming that it's correct, that you don't skip. The one question I did have for him, which I have no clue about, which was, there is a possibility, especially given the number of cards, there is the possibility that you actually could go negative when it comes to market value. But the table only goes to zero when it comes to market value. For certain things, obviously, one thing that doesn't go to zero is fuel. Big surprise. My question to him, the Jay, was, okay, what happens if you hit left, which is the least value you can get, and you go negative, you're supposed to adjust negative still. In that case, do you actually continue to manage it and just say, okay, that extends out forever, and then you have to bring it back, or does it stop? That's one thing that wasn't clarified when it comes to that. And of course, then there's on the other side of the fence, which I also mentioned. It's like, okay, at the other side of the fence, the market values, they have these like 3x, X3, X5, which I'm assuming means multiply 3, multiply by 5. And I said, Jay, okay, multiply what? What market value? Do we multiply the last market value by that number? Or am I missing something in the play? You know? But also, I mentioned to him that one thing that bothered me about the market value at all is that all the market values say like plus 2, plus 1, plus 0. So it makes me feel like it's supposed to be an offset from some base value instead of the actual value itself. My assumption, just from the way it all reads, is that I'm misunderstanding. My original I thought was that, okay, these are just adjustments, okay, plus 1, plus 0, blah, blah, blah. And I went, and then I realized, no, these are actually the market values. And then you do adjustments based on the brackets, and then of course there's the adjustments that you get from when you pick up a Federation contract card. So I'm waiting for him to get back to me. To me, the major concern at the moment is how much money you start off with, because I just want. If he starts off with zero, I have to go, why? Because I'm looking at, and if you start the game, the first thing before you even have the chance opportunity to earn any credits whatsoever is that you have to subtract for maintenance cost. Maintenance cost of one of your ships, you know, for each ship is equal to the current cost of fuel, with a minimum cost of 1. So, if you start with 0, basically, what happens after 0? Do you at that point do you owe someone a dollar? The credit. That's actually something which I mentioned in my post to Jay. I went, Jay, one of the things that I do that bothers me in the rule book, it's not awful, but it bothers me. And that is, he uses, even though he mentions Federation credits, all of the money is in dollars. It says like dollar, you know, dollar sign 1, dollar sign 10. And to me, it's like, okay, no. That what that makes me believe is that you're talking about dollars and not talking about credits. My assumption is that if it's going to be credits, you go like 1C for credits. Now, obviously, 1C could also mean 1 times the value of C, which, you know, the C being the speed of light. But that's outside the context. I don't think, you know, or there's got to be a better way of representing it than saying dollars, because I keep on saying dollars even though you say credits. You know, I said it's one of the things that bothers me. I don't think it kills the game. It doesn't. And I mentioned him just because of I was getting all the things that I found so far kind of wrong, quote unquote. Not always wrong. It's misunderstandings. is that he, man, there's one thing that he also, I noticed, which is there is actually a incorrect, not pronunciation, punctuation. I'm assuming it's his editing program that he used to create the rule book, because of a single quote, you know, apostrophe is a better way of putting it, because that's what it really is, because it's apostrophe S, players, is an underscore. So, and then it makes me believe, wonder, it's like, okay, did Gene actually look at this book? Because if it is, I got some, she has some explaining to do. If not, why? Was Gene just too busy? No. Because usually everything goes through Gene. Gene Sexton. That's what I'm talking about. The editor extraordinaire. So I'm waiting on that. I'm pretty sure I understand the rules. I don't know how well the game plays, though. I was just starting tonight to try to start up a game, and it didn't. I ran into those issues to begin with, and went, you know, okay, wait a minute. Let's understand this first, because that's another thing I did not ask him, which was, of course, can you have negative balance? Can you actually owe money? And there's nothing in the rule book that mentions that you can owe money. So I have to wait and see. So, okay. So we're going. Yeah, TR. Yeah, that'd be a good one, for Dave. Dave's mentioning that credits equal CR or CR 10. I can see 10 CR. Is that, Dave, do you remember how Gene usually denotes that in, like, Prime Directive stuff? Because I'm assuming that in Prime Directive that credits, Federation credits, is mentioned in that rule book. Which, just one thing I forgot to mention in the news portion, which is that Gene released the GURPS Prime Directive GURPS 4E, and it was accepted, and Gene was doing a happy dance because of there was no edits, no modifications that Steve Jackson required of Gene to do, which she was thrilled because of that means that, for at least to her, it's perfect. You know, that means she understood everything that she was supposed to do and got everything right. Now, do you that or Steve Jackson getting laxed? I doubt the latter. I'm more willing to bet that Gene was perfect than the latter, where, you know, it just means Steve Jackson is getting kind of lax. Because I'm sure he's got someone who's, if it's not him, Steve Jackson himself, he's probably got an editor who is on the ball and will catch these things. And actually, the one thing I did post to the Starfleet Universe discussion board, and that is that I was asking about how, when are the hard copies going to be available? Because like any other rule book, I really like a hard copy. I don't like just electronic forms. That's why for the Merchants of Federation, I actually copied it. I printed it out. I got it in a nice little binder, so that, you know, when I, not, well, yeah, binder. So when I take the game to the Gamers of Summer, that we can play it, and I have the rules, and hopefully I can explain it to people. So, Barry.
Hey there.
Hey. So now we can move on to the next topic, which is the Drex.
The Drex.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Drex is kind of an interesting ship. It's got more weapons than any other ship in the game. It's actually got 20 weapons, which I think, what was the old record holder? The Sin? 20 also. Oh, I think the Zen has 20 also, right? 12 phasers, 4 disruptors, and 4 drones. Yeah. Okay. It matches the Zen then for number of weapons.
Okay, which one are you looking at? You're looking at Ken's or looking at yours?
Both.
Okay.
Which is the one that I emailed you? I think the one that should be the current one.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't have the client open.
Yeah, let me just look, because I actually did. Okay, look at it. Because I grabbed them both. Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, the one that you sent me is not the current one.
Oh, the one that's the current one. How many heavy hyper cannons does it have?
The one that's part of a client, it has the FHR heavy cannon was removed.
Well, it's HCH is a heavy hyper cannon.
Right.
Or hypercannon heavy.
Right.
So does the client have 2 or 4?
Of the heavies? 1.
Yeah.
I'm gonna look. 1, 2, 3. It has only 3.
3?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Okay. There is that mob. That is that one. I don't remember which one we're using. Let's say we're using the same one as the client. Let's say I updated the client before I. Okay. So 3 heavy hyper cannons.
Right. The obviously. Actually, I looked at the hyper cannons, the heavy hyper cannons. I looked at the chart, which I have up. For people who on the video, and max
that
explosion
is
12.
No, what's that? No, EXP is explosive hyper cannons.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, explosion, so, explosive, implosion, and then enveloping.
Correct. So a heavy hyper cannon does 12 points of damage if it hits, which is actually pretty. It's a pretty hefty weapon.
Oh yeah.
Considering that you arm it for 2+2 and hold for 1, but you only have 3 of the heavies.
Right, and one of them actually is rear heavy, rear half.
What's that? Oh, the lights.
No, one of the heavies is rear half.
It's not rear half, it's rear hex row.
Oh, sorry, rear hex.
RHR, rear hex row.
Okay.
The row.
Wow.
In fact, all of the hyper cannons, the heavies, have a firing arc of 1 hex row. That's it.
Which is...
That's actually, yeah, that's pretty limited.
No kidding.
Now, it can fire off the hex row, but for every hex away from that, you go, you add 1 to the die roll. So the accuracy drops off pretty quick.
Right.
On the plus side for the Drex, it's a nimble ship, which means it always moves last.
Right.
Unless it's facing another. Is the Orion nimble? I don't know.
Yeah, the Orion's nimble.
Okay, then the Orion, and the Orion is turn mode A. So, well, actually, 2 nimble ships, it's the faster one that moves last.
Right.
If I remember correctly.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter when it comes to turn mode. Unless they're going the same speed, of course.
Right.
Standard
odor
precedence.
It's a matter of movement precedence. Nimble is huge. especially when you have that narrow a firing arc. You need it. Now, the other thing is that the Drex is a computer-operated ship.
Right.
But because the Drex are basically a robotic race. And now, it's a limited supercomputer.
So yeah, it can't do the whole EA thing.
Well, it's actually, it normally subtracts one from the die rolls for, if you have a negative electronic warfare rating, then you subtract one from all direct fire rolls. But I think, oh, hang on, the 4-1, that may be the one that I think the 3 is not the one we were using. I think it's the 4. And the 4 heavy hyper cannons, the supercomputer only works, you basically add one more heavy hyper cannon, which is front hex row. So look at the one I emailed to you. I think that's the one that we should be looking at.
Mm-hmm. The one with the four hyper cannons?
Yeah, the 4 heavies.
Right, for heavy hyper cannons, yes. Yeah, right. I agree.
That the minus one from the die roll is only for the hyper cannon rolls, not for the phasers.
Right.
So, the other thing to keep in mind is that, yeah, that's a pretty hefty weapon, and you've got 4 of them, but every single one of them has got a very limited arc, and they're all different. In that sense, it's a lot like the Jindar.
Jindar.
Yeah, where you have
ugly arcs,
rail guns.
Yep.
Ugly arcs that are all over the place, and it can't fire an alpha.
Right.
This one has the same issue.
Mm-hmm. So even though the weapons can be kind of powerful, you know, individually, the problem is that you can't get them all the same arc.
Correct.
Right. You can't fire two of them at the same time, which is awful because of, obviously, the big issue is that your opponent can then turn the ship and get a different shield to facing.
Correct. Now, you do have and this is the other thing with 4 heavy, it has the enveloping and the implosive rounds have ammunition.
Right.
And if you're using if you use that ammo, once you arm it with that round, you can't discharge it and get the warhead back. So it takes 2 rounds for a heavy and 1 round for a light. So you do have 4 heavy hyper cannons, but you could fire 2 enveloping charges for the heavies, and then you're done. And then you're out of enveloping ammo. So that's kind of important, and it's a little more expensive to arm it as an enveloper,
Okay, so you cut back on the number of rounds to half of what Ken left.
Right, which was nice because it was very easy to balance the ship just by adjusting the number of rounds it had.
Mm-hmm.
Developers at range 3, they do up to 6 points of damage to each shield. That's 36 points of damage, which is huge for a direct fire weapon. That's probably more than any other direct fire weapon in the game.
Mm-hmm.
of course, it gets distributed all over all six shields, and 6 points won't kill a shield, but at least a fresh shield, but it'll sandpaper you pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
The implosive rounds do less damage than an explosive round, but anything that penetrates the shield does double damage. Yeah.
Nasty.
But I think, and I'm not sure, but I think the implosive rounds hit first. Let me check the rules.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I got them up. Okay, damage scored by implosive rounds is resolved first before any other weapons in the same vial except energy howitzers and transporter collector beams. Internal damage or damage to unshielded targets is doubled, then combined with other damage in the same volley. For example, heavy implosion shell caused 6 damage to a ship and 3 of that penetrated as internals. It would then double the total of 6 internals damage points. If 2 different units fire implosive shells, perhaps in addition to other rounds or weapons, so the different phases on a target will be hit. Use the following procedure to satisfy. Okay, well, we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
And it's 2 different units. Because actually, there's one thing I was just looking at the firing arcs for it. And the one thing to keep in mind is that when you get in close.
Yeah.
You can actually get 2 of them in arc at the same time.
If you're willing to take a lower hit probability.
Right. For example, I'm thinking range 2, you know, right through the, right on the shield border.
Yeah.
Where you'd actually have a split shield. That'd be a minus.
Yeah, you can.
That's a 1, -1 for each of the weapons. So instead of being 1-6 to hit, it's a 1-5.
Right.
Which I think it definitely would be worth it.
Yeah, but then you have to fire 2 of them.
Right.
Now you have a better probability of missing because you're firing 2. So the question is, do I take the 1 that's a guaranteed hit and then try to get the 2nd hit later, which is guaranteed, or do I go for both of them with a better probability of one of them missing so I only get,
Well, actually, that's a range 1. The range 1, that is the case, I think.
That's what up to range 3 is an automatic hit if I'm on the hex row.
Yeah, but if you're at the shield break, the right there, the shield border, at range 2, basically it's a -1 for each one of them. Because it's both.
Correct.
It's 1 hex off for both. And to me.
Right. Right. Well, actually, range 2, it's still 1-6 to hit because you got the -1 from the supercomputer.
Oh, look
at that. Yeah.
That's an addition to the normal to hit.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Direct fire weapons.
Yeah.
Basically, it's because of it has the outstanding crew. Let me look at this.
It's a supercomputer.
Well, the supercomputer, okay.
Right.
Direct computer controlled ships have some of the benefits of outstanding crew. And one of those is direct fire weapons. It's G21-211.
Yes.
Which is, in that case, the ship has 3 points of ECCM in addition to other sources of natural butterdom and self-generated limits. If the total taken... Normally, an ECM, ECCM cannot produce a negative shift. This is an exception. But no shift greater than negative one is possible, but can be combined with legendary weapons officer shift. Oh, man.
Yeah, but which we don't have to worry about. But right. it is one of the few ships around that has that built-in ECCM, which really helps out in cases like against wild weasels or other devices. It's great against cloak. You got three ECCM built in.
Yeah, I'm just looking at. Actually, I don't think that matters. I think I read this one, which is the improved repair. Right, doesn't matter because it's for EDR. Subtract one from die roll for repair D8.31 or D14.114. The total number of systems that can be repaired is one more than is shown. Okay, so that does have a benefit. So that you get, instead of repairing only four damage, you can actually repair five.
No, I didn't put that into that ship. However, the Yolanda, on the other hand, does have that capability. Yolanda, actually, which we talked about a few weekends ago,
mm-hmm.
I don't think we mentioned the heal. It uses heal instead of damage control.
Right.
And that one has a healing of six and can repair 12 systems per game. So the Yolanda can really systems? Heal up.
For the Yolanda?
Systems, yeah.
Dang.
For the Yolanda. And it's got a damage control rating of six.
Dang. But Barry.
But getting back to the tracks.
Right. But Barry, you know, from the outstanding crew, one of the things that is pointed out for the Drex computer is that improved repairs. G21.232, which says that you get one additional repair. That's one of the things it says.
Yeah, I didn't put I know. I didn't put that in there.
You didn't put what?
I suppose we could. I should add that. I'll have to go through that again and add that.
Mm-hmm.
But
you didn't make a note of it on the SSD. That's what you mean.
Yeah, I have to add that note.
Okay. I thought you said it didn't apply to the ship, but yes, it does. But
okay, I'll have to add that. Oh boy, that's going to be fun.
Not much room.
It does have a reduced het cost, and it can het twice for free.
Right.
Or with no. So.
No, Ken K. The Drex. Do you use the supercomputer rules? Though, as mentioned before, it is minor. It's not the full supercomputer.
Correct. Yeah, where is the breakdown rate? Oh, the breakdown rating should be 5 or 6. I didn't put that on the ship, but
yeah, should have. Let me look and see what Ken says.
5.6.
Yep.
Which is standard, right?
Yeah. The only one that has a breakdown rating of 6 is the Orion, and I'm pretty sure also the Andromeda.
Yeah. But this ship has 2 free hets, and then it has sort of a standard het breakdown.
Right.
Now, the light hypercannons are faster to arm. Oh, now you can arm a heavy as a light if you want, but it still has the same Sokhets firing arcs. But the lights have a much better firing arc, like LF,
right,
or RF. But it's 30 degrees, not 60 degrees.
Yeah, and they're, jeez.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at how many.
There's six of the lights.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm looking at they're like
a
poor phaser.
Well, it's actually a non-overloadable disruptor with horrible firing arcs.
Yes, that's another way of seeing it. Also, but of course,
that can be held.
Right, and more to the point, I think, is that with the light hypercannons, is that you still have the ability to do implosions and enveloping.
Right, but you're probably going to use your implosion rounds on the lights.
You mean that you probably wouldn't use them on the lights?
Well, that would be a weapon of opportunity where it's like, oh, look at that. It costs 2 points of power to arm an implosive.
Right.
You can arm it on reserve power. It's like, hey, I'm facing a down shield. Put 2 battery points into a light hypercannon, fire it imploding. You only have 8 rounds of implosive, but and it'll do 6 points rather than 3, and then 4. What the heck?
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not going to use it on the heavy because once you've armed it as an implosive, you have to discharge it or fire it as an implosive.
Right.
And, yeah. So, I don't know if you can add an implosive shell to an already armed weapon. Let me check.
I'm checking out myself because
cannot use rolling delay.
Right.
Let's see.
Oh, discharging a weapon will expend the ammunition used to achieve the arming mode. Yikes.
Yep. Yes. So, okay, for HCL, the firing mode is recorded when the weapon is armed. For HCH, the arming mode is recorded on the second turn of arming. Regardless of type, the arming mode cannot be changed without discharging the weapon.
Right.
So you probably, unless it's EA, you're facing a down shield, you've got a heavy that's in arc and on second turn of arming, that's about the only time you're going to use an implosive on the heavies. But the lights, that can be done with reserve power. So, what the heck? Gives you a little more damage.
Okay, that's okay. Barry?
Go ahead.
I got a question. I'm just reading about the ammunition, and the thing is that the heavy hypercannons require 2 spaces of ammo, while the light requires 1 space of ammo.
Correct.
So when you say 8 rounds of implosive, are you mean 8 spaces or 8 rounds of heavy?
Yep.
So it's 8 spaces. Okay.
Yes.
So in the case of the heavy cannons, you only have 4 rounds.
You could fire 4 implosive rounds out of
right. Or 2 enveloping.
Right. And that is very, very limited.
Very, very limited.
That, by the way, that is half of what the standard ship has in the standard SFD for the non-tournament cruiser. It's got about 8 envelopings and 16 implosives.
Right. Right, which is actually what Ken Burnside had as the original Battlecruiser for tournament. Right.
And we found that was just insane, because at that point you just get to range six and you fire an enveloper, you turn, you fire another enveloper, you run away. Maybe if you're running and you fire a third enveloper out the rear. At that point, you've very likely ripped off half his shields all the way around. In addition to anything else you've done.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and with that cheap hat, you can very easy to get that third heavy cannon going.
Understood.
Sometimes even a fourth. Yeah, sometimes you can even get the fourth going. Because you can fire, turn, fire, hit, fire, then start to run away and possibly fire a fourth time. And that was, yeah. So we had to limit that. Otherwise, you the envelopings are just too powerful. It does have 6P1s. Four of them are the wide angles, which suck. Two of them are the particle phasers, which are actually, yeah.
I'm reading the rules for the enveloping shells. Enveloping shells simply cause the listed damage to each shield facing of the target unit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Range three.
That's insane.
Yeah. That's 36 points of damage at range three. Direct fire. Now, it's enveloping, but that's why I had to limit it.
Oh, agree. Oh, holy. Holy freaking cow. Yeah. Oh.
But you can only do it twice.
Yeah, well, that's the reason why you have to limit it, because damn.
Yeah, and you don't want to use it on the lights, because if you look at how, the light uses half the rounds, but it only does 2 points instead of 6 points.
Right. Well,
I guess the lights isn't too bad. I mean, it is. 2 for 1 versus 6 for 2. So, it's 50% more efficient to use it in the heavies. I guess you could use it in the lights.
Right. And the great thing about the lights, one, there are more of them. Two, they have better arcs. And
right.
Three, I think that most of the time, I think we both agree on this, which is that the lights, most probably, you're not going to be using them always because of your limited number of rounds.
Yeah.
So, in my mind, they're the opportunistic kind of lights. Because,
right.
If I recall correctly, the lights can be,
they're single turn.
Yeah, they're charged and fired using reserve. Well, they can be charged and fired using reserve power.
Correct.
Yeah,
but you start right. off holding the heavies, but the lights are unarmed. But it takes that ship has a hard time arming all its weapons.
Yeah, that's the gotcha. Because it doesn't have that much power.
No, it doesn't.
Let me see.
So it's going to be leaving a lot of its weapons empty.
Yeah, because I think you actually gave it more power than Ken. Yeah. Cause, okay, that's eight.
See.
I mean, yeah, that's 8, 9, 10, 11. That's 22, 23, 24, 25,
yeah,
26, 27, 28, 29, 30. So you give it total 30 warp. You have 4 impulse and 4 APRs, so a total of 38 power. While the original,
that's what Ken gave it.
Original with Ken is, okay, 6, 10, and then, oh, 6, 10, that's 20.
You gave it 38,
no,
too.
You gave it 38 also, okay. You just changed the arrangement of boxes.
I think I put an additional left and an additional right warp on mine and took out 2 boxes of center.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the one. Right, right. Which
right. Now I also took out 2 wide angle phaser ones. Because Ken had
right.
gave it 6 PW1s and 2 particle phaser ones, and I gave it 4 wide angle phaser ones and 2 particle phaser ones. So basically, the FAR, L and the FAR are reduced from banks of 2 to banks of 1.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that I saw as an addenda, which is that on the original sheet, it says the hit cost while CPU active is 2.5. It's not right. That's 4.
Right.
Yeah, I saw the addenda.
Yeah.
That was the original SSD.
Right. And Ken didn't pick up on that. He still had hit cost of 2.5, but I corrected it to 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise the ship was just too freaking powerful. Cost 2.5 is just too cheap.
Yeah, and as it is, I think that's was due to. I mean, the it was a miscalculation because I think the actual rule
yeah.
says that it is a 20% savings, not a 50% savings, on head cost.
Right. It is.
And I forget if that's. I think that's a super computer usage.
Correct.
Thing.
Yeah. But now it doesn't have much in the way of hull.
That is a problem.
Yes. But it does have. I'm not sure what is the CPU damage dot. Let's see.
Yeah. We wondering about what's hit on what?
There's a CPU boxes, which is your supercomputer.
No, the CPU boxes, those are bridges.
Those are bridge boxes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, in that case, if they're hit on bridge, that it's almost impossible to take out the bridge. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But it does not have any other control spaces.
Right, that is the control spaces.
Right, but... Let's see what right, but what are CPU boxes destroyed on? Are they destroyed on just bridge or
no,
are they destroyed on
these
all
are okay. Here where it says direct ships do not possess bridge auxiliary control or emergency bridge boxes. Some have flag bridge. That's weird. Instead of CPU boxes, are employed onto control ship, these boxes are destroyed on either bridge or auxiliary control, but not emergency bridge damage point, as long as at least one of these boxes is present. The computer operates normally and is considered controlled. The ship is considered controlled.
Okay, so bridge, so it's destroyed on bridge and aux con.
Right. So 2 and 12.
And Bridge is 2 and 12, but only one per volley.
Correct.
1-2 and 1-12 per volley.
Right.
Yeah. And it's got six of them, so it would be pretty rare that it would be uncontrolled.
Yeah, well, most ships, it's rare that they become uncontrolled. I think the least amount of control spaces is on the Orion.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes things quite interesting.
one actually has a danger of.
Yeah, because actually I think I remember playing a game where I was trying to get the Orion uncontrolled because I got down to one box. He had one box of control space. It's like, I didn't quite, couldn't take it out. I think this also is live action, you know, meaning that, you know, it was in real life, IRL.
Now one other thing. Because it has four for your het roll, it only has four batteries, not five.
Okay, so you left it with the four batteries that Burnside?
I left it with four batteries, yeah.
Okay.
So, in that sense, you can basically reserve power two light hyper cannons, but not if they're using I think the implosive rounds cost the same amount to arm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do. So that's where the implosive rounds are probably going to be used on, is the lights. I mean, what the heck. Oh, I'm facing a down shield. I'm going to battery. Hey, look at that. I'll use implosive. What the heck?
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Right. Explosives, there's unlimited ammo for them.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I love that. Oh, jeez.
What?
I'm just thinking about the client and trying to implement this in the client. I mean, tracking of the ammo, because it's kind of a direct fire. But there's another weapon that actually has ammo that's direct fire. I forget what it is, but the Largs. The light railgun. Was it light railguns? Yeah, I think the light railguns.
Oh, yes.
Are the ones
or
that
the heavy railguns.
They actually have ammo, you know. But of course.
Yes, they do. For alternate firing modes, I think.
Mm-hmm. But for this, the biggest issue for the client actually would be that for explosive, you know, for normal explosive rounds, there is no ammo.
It's unlimited.
It's unlimited. But and then you have a limited number of implosion rounds and limited number of enveloping rounds. So that'd be interesting. I don't know if the client can handle that. But anyhow, that was a minor aside.
Well, it can be made to handle it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, agreed. But you know, I'm assuming that any testing that you've done in the client basically is hand-tracked.
Yeah. Now, it's also interesting that you've got a lot of rear-firing heavy weapons on this ship.
Yeah.
Two light heavy hyper cannons and a heavy hyper cannon.
Yeah. So wow. That definitely, tactically, that makes it for some interesting situations.
Yeah.
Because you might actually want your opponent to chase you. So you actually can hurt him more. Oy.
Yeah.
Dang.
But having said that, you don't have that much the rears are not that. There's only two lights and a heavy, and the lights, as I said, are pretty light.
Right, but I'm just. But come on, Barry. Imagine this: that you come in, you do your battle run. Now, assuming that you get at least close to, if not completed, close to getting internals on the person's ship, because obviously the big issue for that is just if the person keeps enough range, doesn't get within range three, they have a good chance of limiting how many of the heavy cannons can hit you on that same shield.
Mm-hmm.
But if he gets too much damage on that one shield, when he runs away and he brings his rear cannon to face you, have it, nice enveloping ammo set up in the rear, so that anytime that he tries to chase you to keep position on you, he's gonna get internals.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of the craziness of having the heavy weapons facing the rear.
Right. But having said that, you basically are only going to get one shot of enveloping. And, it's going to hit a down shield. There's probably only going to be one at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you might do five. Point, let's say you hit it 4 to 6, you might hit do 5 points of damage on a down shield. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's 5 internals. Unless your number one is down, in which case he's going to be using imploding and mm-hmm. saying, hey.
Oh, ow, 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 ow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
But having said that, you probably have to set up that enveloping in the rear ahead of time and just hold on to it until you can induce them to chase you.
Right. Which is there a particular reason why you wouldn't want to do that? Really? Because you know before he faces your rear. Before he's in the rear arc, most probably you've already done at least one battle pass. So you know there's at least damage to his shields, period.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that would definitely... Yeah. And only what cost you, half a point? No, sorry, that's more... Yeah, it's
one point to hold a heavy.
1 point to hold it.
Yeah.
It would be worth it. It's like, how many
of... Oh, yeah.
Because, Barry, how many have held through a game Suicide Shuttle? Just hoping and praying that you get close enough to actually be able to use it. How many times have you... gone through a whole game without being able to use your suicide shuttles?
More than I can count.
Yes, exactly. And this one you got a
better
chance
at. This is a lot easier to throw in there than that.
Yep.
On the other hand, this ship does have a hard time getting a shield, penetrating a shield.
Right.
It just doesn't have that kind of... alpha strike to punch a shield.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. And of course, then there's the arcs, which limit what you can do because of you only can get at least a far enough, far range. I'm not talking about close range. Because that's one thing. Obviously, the Drex want to be. The Drex wants to be nice and close.
Yes, they do.
Because of you can get it, so you can get two weapons in arc. Now, the one thing that I don't see at all when it comes to the direct fire weapons. I got a bookmark. I'm going back and forth. And that is firing arc. Da, da, da. Right. Special arcs, a single X row. They also could also not be improved by the advent of X technology when they were increased to 60 degree arcs. Are given a pump. And of course, that's negative one. My only question is that at range one, can the let's say, you know, at range one, can the FHR arc, can you fire out shield number 2 or 6?
Let's just say this again.
For FHR arc, at range one.
Okay.
FHR arc weapon. Can it?
Yes.
Fire off out the shield number 2 or 6.
It at range one. Hex off of the hex row.
Yes.
It goes. It takes. It adds one to the die roll. And it cannot go further than so the next hex row. It can't. In fact, I don't even think it can go into the next hex row. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's in the rules.
Single hex row and firing arcs can also be shifted slightly by directed turn modes, which interesting. Okay, right. So the single hex row arcs can fire at targets outside the arc, and negative one penalty to each hex target is outside the arc. At no time, however, can a weapon fire enter or pass any adjacent hex row arc. Oh, okay. So it couldn't fire because it'd be entering that adjacent hex row arc. Okay.
Right. So it basically could do front arc minus the hex rows on the corner.
Right. So you want to be, you never want to get to range, the Drex would never want to be at range one. They prefer range
correct.
Two. And yes. Two, as I said, shield splitting range two.
Yes.
So it's a minus one, but then you get the offset on the die roll because of the supercomputer, so you're still at 1 to 6.
Now, having said that, look at range 12. It's not bad. Remember that you subtract one from the die roll on the heavy on the hypercannons.
That's true. Dang.
So you have a 1 to 5 hit number with an explosive round doing 10 points of damage.
Right.
That's
and, you get an auto hit all the way out to range 6. Because these 1 to 5s is not
automatic
1 to 5.
Hit.
Right.
No, 1 to 5 is out to range
6.
12. Because you subtract 1 from your die roll.
No. But the actual to hit is all the way out to range 6, which means it acts in actuality, because of the supercomputer, it's actually 1 to 6.
Yeah.
So it's automatic from
correct.
Range 1 to range
it's
6.
Automatic hit out to 6.
Yep.
Yes.
Dang.
Yeah.
Gone.
But at range 12, you know, let's say I've got somebody directly in front of me. I've got them in my front hex row. I can hit them with 1 heavy and 4 lights. The lights doing about the same as a standard disruptor at that range with a slightly better hit number. And the heavy doing more.
Mm-hmm.
And my wide-angle phasers
Oh, crap. I forgot about that, too. They affect the phasers, too, don't they?
No, it does not affect phasers. The supercomputer does not affect phasers.
Oh, it doesn't? Okay.
If it did, no, it doesn't. I deliberately put that in there. Otherwise, it was just too powerful.
Okay, I don't see that mentioned.
Because
I see it's nimble. You have the,
looking?
Okay, oh, okay.
Built-in ECC.
It just says for all hyper cannon rolls. Okay. It just
rolls.
Right. Right. It explicitly says just the hyper cannon rolls. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I had originally set it up so that it did it for all rolls, and people were like, nah, that's too much.
Yeah, so you're trying to tweak the directs just a little bit to bring it down.
Yeah, tone it down. Because otherwise, if it was subtracting one from all die rolls, holy crap. Then all of a sudden, the wide-angle phasers had all the advantages of the wide-angle phaser, meaning that if you're rolling sixes, you're still not doing too badly. But on the other hand, by subtracting one from those die rolls, the average damage went up significantly. It went up past the phaser one. And the particle phasers, oh my, my. They were deadly when you start subtracting.
Yeah. Well, for regular play, holy freaking cow, man!
Yeah,
this is nuts.
Yeah, the particle phasers are high average damage, but if you roll fives and sixes, they do nothing. They touch very easily.
Agreed.
But you only have two of them on the ship, so it's not too terrible.
That is the one of those crazy things with the directs, and that is the variety of phasers. Because normally...
The ship has all of one kind.
Right, yeah, exactly. Normally, like, they have the wide phasers or the particle phasers, but they don't have both of them.
Well, there's other Omega ships that have mixtures. The L'Oreal has wide angles and micro phasers. I think there's a few of the other races that have a mixture of usually a wide angle and something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's our cue to call it a night.
Yes. I was just thinking the same thing.
Well, Barry, I will see you this weekend because I'll be there Game of Summer also.
Yep. So I'm looking forward to Saturday. I think Trish is giving me a ride up there, and then after that, I don't know how I'm getting to and from the hotel or home after that. And then Wednesday,
sure.
I need to get up. Yeah, Wednesday I need to get up to Harrisburg Airport, and I have no idea how I'm doing that because my wife will have left for Pittsburgh by then.
Well, worst case, see if you can get an Uber.
That gets expensive.
Oh, understood. Hopefully some this. So you're flying out on Monday?
Wednesday.
Well, Wednesday. Okay.
Yeah. And if I hadn't bought the plane ticket, I should have. I could have just said, "Hey, I'll fly out of Pittsburgh," but I already bought the plane ticket. That would have been easier, but I didn't do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't think my company's going to want to pick up the $200.
When do you have to get to the airport on Wednesday?
Oh, crap. I left. I'm on my Bluetooth headset. I left my phone in the other room. If you give me 5 minutes, I can tell you where my flight is.
Okay.
Let's see.
Well, while Barry is doing that, I'm just going to mute him for the moment. Obviously, the Merchants of the Federation will be playing it this weekend at Gamers of Summer. I'm going to see what I can do about possibly, maybe, recording, you know, the gameplay, you know, record the board game and see how that goes. I've got a video camera. Hopefully I can use it. I have to test it out like tomorrow to see if that's possible. Also, obviously the big thing is going to be making sure people can actually agree to me recording them. Most people, I don't think we actually would be that, against being recorded, especially when we're just playing a game. The worst case scenario, it might be just me and Barry, you know, because most if I do get to record it, my whole idea is not to focus on the players, but focus on the board. Just have one camera focused on the board, because that's about all I got one camera, you know. That's all I got, you know. In theory, I could try recording from like my phone too, but I don't have all of the equipment to do that. So, and I don't have time enough to get everything together when it comes to equipment. But hopefully, Barry and I can play it and find out how good it is or how bad it is. For most part, it looks kind of interesting. The one thing, obviously, when it comes to Merchants of the Federation, I need to work on. I have to play it just to give it a good feeling for. Is that how it all plays out? Because of one of the things that was kind of confusing to me when I first read it was that the Federation contract cards, they play triple duty in this game, which is an interesting mechanic for me. I'm not used to playing this kind of game, so it's a big surprise. But because there's three parts to it, they've got, of course, you got the contract portion that you complete the contract, you get this value from it. And then there is also on the contract card, there is, if you're building an installation, you have to have that card that has that installation that you want to actually build. And then at the very bottom is the market adjustments. Basically, when you flip over the face side up cards that are community based, meaning that everyone sees them, so that, and then you can pick one of those cards, and then you pick one card out of the deck, which no one sees except for you. You can then, you know, that card that gets laid down on the board, you know, that gets picked out from the deck and put onto the board there, that adjusts the market value, which is what I was complaining about at the beginning of the game when it comes to the first turn. That first turn, the market value, it might be, maybe Jay wanted it to be quite random like that, but it can be really, really fluctuate. It can be really different from the beginning point. Actually, I had to recalculate. I originally selected four cards, and I calculated out, and one of them actually went into the negative and then went positive. So I had to recalculate everything so that it never went negative, because it all depends upon how you actually process the cards. My guess is that you process the cards all the name. Oh, Jay, thank you. I definitely am very interested to hear, get your responses on those. And I'm hoping to play the game this week. I got the nice big copy out. I even laminated it. You got it laminated and all. So I spent the big bucks. it's actually a beautiful board, you know. I think that's part of beautiful. Obviously, you already heard my comments I'm assuming you read my comments about the market value and how that to me is a little confusing. But overall, no, it is. I'm hoping you weren't the phone that called in, because if it is, I apologize for not picking up. I'm always concerned about those people. Okay, cool. Barry.
Hey there. I texted you the flight information.
Okay.
So it looks like I'd like to be at the airport no later than 9 a.m.
On Wednesday morning.
Wednesday.
Wow.
Yes. Is that a problem?
Shouldn't be a problem.
What's that?
Shouldn't be. If you need a ride, I think I can do it. Yeah.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Okay, sure.
That would be awesome.
Sure. So
okay.
You'll be in York, right?
At the airport. What's that?
You'll be in York.
Yes,
Wednesday.
My house is in York.
Right. Okay.
So it's about a half hour drive from my house to the airport.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I can do that.
And probably we could go out for breakfast. There's a diner up the street. I'll buy the breakfast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. No problem.
All right. So.
Well, then I'll see you this
weekend.
We'll
figure out an exact time.
Right.
Oh, thank you. That is much appreciated.
No problem.
Okay.
Okay, have a good night.
Night.
Okay, bye. Yeah, Monday is Labor Day, which is awesome. I'm hoping to work on some of the SFU projects that I have. You know, the client, maybe work on. There's a little web-based client that I'm hoping to work on a little bit. I got some minor stuff done for that. I got prioritized whether I want to work on. There's some FedCom stuff, some ideas there that I'd like to implement and see how it all looks and how it integrates and how well it works. To begin with, you know, obviously, there's a lot of things that I would really like to do for the Federation Commander to make it easier to use. But at the same time, I need to really look at it and see what is possible. You know, overall, is it? After I make this modification, how does it look? How does it interact? Does interaction, is it good or not? And if it is, then I'll keep it. Otherwise, I might have to chuck it. I'm sure that anything that I can do to improve it, it will be greatly appreciated, and I definitely would like it. Okay. Well, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.